Welcome to the CB Wallet Podcast. I'm Phil Lucas.
And I'm Phil Gerrard. Why are we here, Phil?
Well, we're going to talk about the greatest disasters in world history and some you may not have heard of. We're going to find out what went wrong, how it went wrong, and whether it was our fault or God in the sky's fault.
Awesome! But remember, Phil, It's not our intention to make light of the sometimes quite substantial mortality rates involved in some of these disasters, is it?
No.
I think we should just be involved. We should just concentrate on what went wrong, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but be honest with yourself, Phil. If it came on the news, I reckon you'd be interested, you fucking weirdo railway man.
I love being bathed in breaking news.
What are we wanging on about this week?
The Bristol Channel floods.
In these programmes, we'll be looking at the River Severn, the longest river in Britain.
The tide starts out in the Atlantic Ocean as a great bulge in the sea. As the Earth goes round, this bulge travels towards the coast of Britain. There, the bulge produces the effect of the sea rising and falling. When it reaches the mouth of the River Severn, the tidal bulge is squeezed between the riverbanks, which makes the rise and fall even greater. Usually, the tide comes in and out twice a day, every 12 hours. But sometimes it comes up the Severn estuary in a very special way. As a single tidal wave. This otter seems to know that something's coming and leaves its home in the riverbank. And here it comes, a great wave rushing up the river. Behind the bore wave, the water's being pushed upstream by the incoming tide at over 10 miles an hour. Uprooted trees and other debris go rushing by. What started as a small trickle in a mountain bog is now a powerful mass of unstoppable water.
Quite a good one to do, I guess, because Britain is underwater, isn't it?
Well, it is as we record. Whether that will be the case when it goes out depends how quick you edit this.
Or how quickly Britain drains. My father recently got stuck in his car in a flood.
All right.
He was on his way to the shops. He tried to ford a flood. No. Is that what you say, ford a flood?
No idea.
He tried to go through the flood anyway.
With a Ford?
Not with a Ford, okay. No. With a RAV4.
RAV4 and a Ford, yeah.
RAV4. My father rang my mother on his newfangled mobile phone, which I imagine he turned on for the first time in 6 months.
Is it a Doro?
That's right. He fired up his Sagan. Nokia 8310. Had a couple of games of Snake and then rang my mum. And my mum told me a story. She was making soup.
Right. Your mum does a lot of cooking.
Yeah, no, man, got to fill the
day,
haven't you?
Doing something in the kitchen where one of your stories happens.
Hell. All my stories take place in 1951, that's why. She told me that she rang and said, I'm underwater, car's filling with water, can't open the door, send help. And so my mum said she put the phone down and she went, well, I don't see why I shouldn't finish making this soup.
Very crucial, isn't it? Crucial timings with soup.
It's very crucial.
Yeah,
you can't just let a soup simmer. You've got to be there. And when she went to go and get him, another kindly farmer was already fishing him out. And a small crowd had gathered.
Oh.
So I'm surprised not to see it on the local news, really. But like, a small crowd had gathered. And my mother, she stood and watched with two other women as they were pulling him out.
He was in the car, was he?
Up to his neck, he was. Up to his neck in the water. And I pull him out.
Right.
And my mum stood by the banks, I guess. And there were two other women there. And they were going, how's this idiot got himself into this situation? Mm. Like, what an idiot. And my mum went, yeah, I mean, it's embarrassing, isn't it? What an absolute moron. And this woman went, I mean, is his wife going to go and pick him up? And my mum went, no, I'm his wife. And the woman went, oh, God, I'm so sorry. And the woman was like, no, you're right. He is an absolute idiot. So this particular disaster is our first Bristolian disaster.
Oh, it is,
There must be other disasters in Bristol, because Bristol is a very big, meaty city with lots of stuff happening.
I'm sure there is.
Would you move to Bristol?
I think I might do, actually. I like Bristol. Yeah, would you? Or
I would go to Bristol, but only because I'm following Banksy at the moment, trying to unmask the blighter. And I think that Bristol is where he might be. Do you think anybody in the world cares who Banksy is?
No, I certainly don't. I've now moved full circle.
Yeah.
And I would consider it vandalism, paint over it straight away, irrespective of the value.
I've changed my opinion because Banksy, right? Banksy's from Bristol, right? That's the only thing we know about Banksy.
Yeah.
Other than he's probably quite a privileged white guy. Oh, we know that as well about Banksy, I should imagine. But Banksy, he does the sort of art that you're impressed with when you're 17.
Exactly.
And then you get to, and then 25, most people have grown out of that sort of stuff. But no, Banksy's still at it. But he's making millions and millions of dollars doing some quite the most Route 1 art you've ever seen in your life. So, Phil, the Bristol Channel floods. What was it?
It was a huge surge of water which coursed up the Bristol Channel in England, causing a lot of damage.
When did it happen?
The 20th of January 1607 or the 30th of January 1607, depending on which calendar you were using at the time.
Oh, bloody hell,
different
really?
Different times, Phil, different times. Some say it was 1606. Some say it was 1607. What we can say on this podcast with absolute clarity, though, is that this disaster happened on either the 20th or the 30th of January in either 1606 or 1607.
Awesome. Mm. Is that because of the Reformation? Is that right? We had loads of popes and then we wanted one pope?
Yeah,
is that
swapping it? Over, isn't it? Swapping calendars from the Roman Catholic. I've got it written here.
I'll go for it.
Right. The Gregorian calendar was replacing the old Julian one, but because the new one was Catholic and not everyone was keen to adopt it, Bristol still used the old calendar. So for them, the date was January the 20th, but many people in London used the new calendar, so for there, it was January the 30th.
Are you seriously telling me it was a different day in London than it was in Bristol?
But still much the case.
It's quite good. How many people died?
The exact number is not known, but it is estimated to have been somewhere around 2,000. This is a big one.
Bloody hell, 2,000. Mm. All drownings, I suppose.
Drownings, yeah.
Let's get this into our heads, man, because there's some people who listen to this podcast who aren't from Bristol.
Yeah.
They're not even from England. They're from all over the wonky world. They're not going to know what Bristol is. Explain Bristol immediately.
Well, okay. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll start with Bristol, and then I'll move on to the Bristol Channel.
Okay.
Which is kind of where the floods happened. Right. First of all, Phil, I would like to let millennials know that Bristol was the basis for a common phrase in the 60s and 70s, Bristols.
Oh, really?
Yes. Now, Bristols meant a women's breasts because Bristol City rhymed with...
It doesn't, though.
Titties.
Oh, titties.
Bristol City.
Brittles. Titties. Is that genuinely where that comes from?
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't have to be Bristol then, does it?
Well, exactly. This makes me question, why was the city of Bristol chosen? I think any number of cities would have fitted the bill. For example, Phil, you could have had Belfast's.
Yeah.
That works, doesn't it? Chester's.
Chester's better.
Chester's. Ely's.
Yeah.
Anyway, Bristol it was. So, we learn that Bristol is a city.
Yep, the city of Bristol.
Cue the Wikipedia quote, Phil.
Bristol is a city and a county in southwest England with a population of 463,400. The urban area population of 724,000 is the eighth largest city in the UK. The city borders North Somerset and South Gloucestershire, with the cities of Bath and Gloucester to the southeast and northeast, respectively. South Wales lies across the River Severn estuary.
All very factual, Phil, but incredibly boring. Yes. I've got better facts. All the British Concords were built in Bristol.
It is genuinely a shame you don't have Concorde anymore.
Oh, it's tragic.
And they're not trying to replace it with anything?
No.
They're trying to make us fly less. Have you noticed?
None of that. I've been on 4 planes in the last month.
People are trying to convince me, Philip Lucas, that plane travel is contributing to the flooding. And
really?
I just don't believe it.
I'm not having that.
not having that?
Not unless a plane lands in the water and causes a wave.
I can't see a connection.
How's that connection? Oh, is it to do with climate malarkey?
Climate? It's the climate emergency. I've noticed as well...
Oh, you've bought into it. So it used to be climate change.
Yes. No, it's the climate emergency. It's an emergency film.
Okay.
I'm surprised you're sitting there quite so nonchalant when there's a climate emergency on, right? Have you noticed that Extinction Rebellion seem to be getting an awful lot less done now that the weather's turned bad? I've noticed that. They're not gluing themselves to anything anymore, are they? Because it's raining. It seems to be a summer-based emergency for Extinction Rebellion. Mm. Fact me two times.
The chocolate Easter egg was invented in Bristol.
Do you invent a chocolate Easter egg? I suppose everything has to be invented.
Everything's got
to
be invented.
Do you know how it was invented?
No.
Someone that dipped an egg in chocolate. If you want to invent something now, what are you going to do? First of all, you're going
to
focus group it. But you're going to have like, because it's going to have to be like either computing or biochemistry, isn't it? So you're going to have to put a shitload of research in. Mm. But in the olden days, you could invent something by accident.
Yeah.
Fucking chicken tikka masala. He just knocked a tin of tomato soup in the dinner.
Really?
You can't knock a can of tomato soup in your dinner and invent something now. It's all been done. Rugby. Pick the ball up and run with it. You've invented a new game. Have you fuck?
Was that an accident, rugby?
Oh, they say it.
I mean, it looks like an accident.
Yeah.
It should never have progressed to the level it has.
I mean, it's the sort of thing that would only happen in a private school, isn't it? No one picks the ball up and runs with it in a secondary school and invents a new game.
Terrible game.
Fact me three times.
The world's first bungee jump took place in Bristol in 1979, thus spawning a load of twats and hundreds of unnecessary deaths.
I thought bungee jumping was all like tribal and that from the past.
Well, it probably was.
I would never go bungee jumping.
Never.
I have no idea what the attraction is of that.
And it's not because I'm scared. Actually, it is because I'm scared.
Mm. Fact me four times.
There's a book in Bristol that is bound with human skin.
That's cool, isn't it? The Necronomicon.
The what?
The Necronomicon.
What's that?
The book bound in human skin in The Evil Dead.
Sorry, it's a film.
It is a film, yeah.
John Horton, lad in Bristol,
was
accused of murdering his girlfriend in 1821, was subsequently hanged. The doctor who testified against him took his body for medical purposes and had parts of his skin tanned in order to bind a book, which you can go and see in Bristol today. I'm not sure that's medical.
I mean, that's cool,
yeah.
But really, really out of order.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of using every part of a pig, isn't it?
I like the fact that you said he was only accused of murdering his girlfriend, and that's enough. Is that enough to hang him and then use his skin?
Well, I probably
I hope he was guilty.
Edited that a bit. I think
it seems a little bit out of order, doesn't it? Oh, fuck off, mate! I didn't even do it.
So you got the city called Bristol, Phil?
Absolutely.
It sits very near the River Severn.
Yep.
Okay. The Bristol Channel is a major inlet in the island of Great Britain, which separates South Wales on the north from Devon and Somerset on the south.
Yeah.
It extends from the lower estuary of the River Severn right to the North Atlantic Ocean. It's almost 30 miles wide at its western
Bloody
limit.
Bloody hell, really?
Yeah, and it sort of looks and acts like a funnel, okay? And that means that it's liable to extreme tidal surges. One thing to point out here, Phil, is that on both sides of the Bristol Channel, there are extensive low-lying areas. It's an area still prone to flooding today. In short, Phil, Bristol sits near the base of this massive channel, where the river meets the sea. Right, I think I'm done. You know what Bristol is.
Yep.
You know what misogynist old men used to call breasts.
Bristols.
And you know what the Bristol Channel is.
Big old muddy flatlands.
Exactly. So move on, Phil.
The date is the 20th of January, 1607.
Right.
Or the 30th of January, 1607. Mm. Or 1606. Now, almost definitely, King James I is sitting on the throne.
Okay, King James, incidentally, is the man we have to thank for giving us the King James version of the Bible. The definitive edition of the good book in my book.
Have you read the good book?
Yes.
I attempted to read it once.
You've got to stick with it.
Really? Why? Is it got a good ending?
No. No, I mean,
A ram with seven heads?
No, what I mean is there are some seriously tedious bits.
Oh, man. I got stuck at Stephen begat Jeremy, begat Brian, begat...
There's a
and
lot
also,
of that.
I no one told me that there are very detailed instructions on how to build a tabernacle.
Oh, phenomenally detailed. And so boring.
It's literally like IKEA instructions on how to build a tabernacle. Yeah. Thou nails must be 9 inch long, or you're going to hell.
I don't think you should ever read the Bible with the Old Testament first.
Oh, really? Well, you start with the New Testament?
I'll start with the New.
Well, I understand the New Testament if I haven't read the Old Testament.
Pretty much.
Because I didn't understand Infinity War. So, Phil, this 20th of January 1607 or 30th of January 1607 or 1606 started like any other. The people of Bristol, Phil, and the surrounding areas, they were going about their daily business,
right,
being Bristolian in the world, right? Bear in mind, it was 1607 or 1606, so going about their business probably means watching people getting hung, drawn and quartered, constantly trying to figure out what's funny about a Shakespeare comedy. Yeah. There is nothing funny about Shakespeare comedy. Yeah. And worrying about the bubonic plague, which is going to get very saucy in about 60 years' time. At 9 a.m. or midday, depending on who you listen to and which calendar you use, eyewitness accounts of those near the Bristol Channel tell of huge and mighty hills of water advancing at a speed faster than a greyhound can run.
Ooh.
How fast can a greyhound run?
45 miles an hour.
Really? Bloody hell. Sudden, Phil. Instant. Brutal.
Horrible. Right? Horrible.
1 minute you're going about your day in Bristol. The next, your property's smashed to smithereens and you're either killed in the force of the surge, drowned, or taken along in the freezing water. This is all-encompassing and horrific.
Well, imagine you're in your little plot outside your little mud wattle and daub hut. I know they're a little bit more advanced by that stage.
Not that much, actually.
But you're in your little thing, you're just tending your turnips, and suddenly this bloody 20-foot-high wave screams towards you.
Yeah.
It's just going to just obliterate.
Yeah, everything. No warning, nothing.
Oh, it's horrific, it's awful.
And don't forget, Phil, this is 1607 or 1606. Mm. Most people don't know how to swim, right? And so getting swept along in the water was pretty much a death sentence.
Yeah, we had this, didn't we, when we did the Princess Alice disaster.
Yeah, they didn't know how to swim.
They didn't know how to swim.
And don't forget further, Phil, we're talking about a rural environment in the 17th century.
Yes. Right?
The buildings at that time would have been no match for any sort of natural disaster.
Oh, God, no.
They're very much the early stages of the Three Little Pigs story rather than the latter stages of the Three Little Pigs story.
Yes.
No match for water or wolves. So it's horrific, Phil. It came without warning and it submerged farms and towns very, very quickly.
Horrible.
As one commentator later wrote, Phil...
Men that were rich getting out of bed in the morning were poor before noon the same day. I might add there, Phil, or dead.
Yeah, it's bad. After the initial wave came a torrent that swept across the fields, right? The torrent reached a speed of 30 miles an hour and a height of 25 foot.
That is huge.
25
that's
foot?
7 metres.
So what you're saying is there's this huge wave and that smashes stuff.
Yeah.
And that brings with it, I mean, the rest of the water it's attached to.
All the other water.
All the other water. Because you don't just get that with wave. You don't just have a wave and that's the end of it, do you? It has to bring all its water with it, right? And it's swept up to 4 miles inland.
That's a massive amount.
Yeah, all through the Bristol area. It hit North Devon, Phil.
Yeah.
Pembrokeshire, Glamorgan, Monmouthshire and Cardiff. All prime camping spots. Ruined. Tents everywhere, right? I mean, even modern camping wouldn't have been able to stand up to this. So the sort of camping supplies...
Phaser dome tent.
Even a phaser dome tent wouldn't have been able to stand up to this. So in 1606 or 1607, their camping supplies are not going to stand up to this sort of bashing. The area flooded, Phil, in case you're interested in that.
Oh, yes, yes.
Was over 200 square miles.
Wow.
Sounds like a lot, doesn't it?
Bloody does,
Have you got any idea how large 200 square miles is?
Not a clue.
No, me neither.
Sounds loads, but I wouldn't have I couldn't draw it.
It's the sort of thing that we would usually express in football pitches.
Yeah.
Have you not? You've not done that?
No.
No. Okay. The enormous amount of flood water only started receding about 10 days after the initial event. So they were living with it for quite a long time. And they're all, and this is the sort of time when everyone's throwing their excrement out into the street, isn't it? So it's probably quite pooey, that water. It's estimated that over 2,000 people were killed, not just by pooey water, just by general water. I'm just saying that some of that water would have been pooey.
Would have been, yeah. Well, it would have been everything, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would have been everything.
Would have brought everything with it, and then the human waste would have got mixed up with it.
I'm thinking they probably died in lots of different ways then, because if it's 10 days, then they died of drowning in the first instance.
Yeah.
But after that, it's disease, isn't it? And
yes, that would have been played a big... So, yeah, first part, swept away.
Yeah.
Drowning.
Yeah.
Because no one knew how to swim.
Yeah. Getting trapped somewhere.
Getting trapped. And then after that, you've got... I'm just going to list diseases. I've no idea.
Typhus.
Cholera. Just all the dirty things
all
that
the
happen.
Dirty diseases.
Yeah. So it's a mishmash of horror.
Yeah, it'd be awful. Mm. A man at the time called Walter Young...
Yes.
...wrote about the events at Barnstable in Devon and elsewhere that morning.
Okay.
He said... The 20th of Jan, by reason of a great tempest, the sea break in at divers places on the north side of this country, as at Barnstable, where there was much hurt done. At Bridgewater, two villages near thereabouts, and one market town overflown. And report of 500 persons drowned, besides many sheep and other cattle. At Bristol, it flowed so high that divers' packs, which was brought thither against Paul's Fair, standing together in a common oar of the sea for such purposes, stood 3 foot deep in the water.
No idea what that last sentence means, but thank you for doing that for us straight from the set of Poldark.
But Phil, what Walter has highlighted here is that they were not just dealing with the death of 2,000 people.
No, he said animals, didn't he?
He said animals, right? So that means that the local economy is totally destroyed as well.
Yes, because it's an agricultural economy.
Agricultural economy.
Based a lot on pigs, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Chickens, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
Goats.
Yeah.
Cattle.
Yeah. So the only people not affected are those selling salmon, koi carp, goldfish, mosquitoes, toads, and platypi. Basically, everything that can't breathe underwater is fucked, right? This is horrific stuff. Over 400 years later, this still remains the UK's worst ever flood disaster.
That's horrendous. And I bet you not a lot of people know about it.
I've never heard of it. But it wasn't all bad news, Phil.
Oh, no.
In 1606 or 1607.
Right.
In Monmouth, it was reported that a milkmaid was rescued from drowning by two lusty strong men.
Ooh.
You like that, don't you? two lusty Bristolian men rescued a milkmaid.
Yeah.
You know how they did it?
No.
They made a boat from a water trough.
Hallelujah.
Based on the flood marks from a series of churches in the area, we do know that the water reached over 7 foot above sea level on
this
the Welsh side.
This is a low-lying area as well. That's...
7 foot, that's mad, right?
That's me plus a foot.
And over 7.5 foot, that's you plus a foot with a stovepipe hat on, on the Somerset levels.
Wow.
So what we're essentially saying there is taller than anybody was. And in fact, it's 1,600 people shorter. They're about five foot this time.
Yes, yes.
So, you know, taller than the tallest person you've ever seen. But of course, the initial surge was much, much higher, coming in, as we've said before, at 25 foot or 7 metres. But that was the first wave.
Yes.
But of course, Phil, humans are humans, as we know.
Yeah.
If there's money to be made out of disaster and abject human misery, people will definitely take advantage of that.
It depresses me.
Listen to this little piece written at the time, Phil.
The waters have washed many on the rocks of poverty and misery, but so far they have brought some profit. For some seafaring man, or you might call them thieves, they come down here in their boats and they get richly laden with goods which they find swimming in the waters.
Looting, Phil!
That's what that is, good old-fashioned looting.
Good old-fashioned looting.
Would you loot?
Do you know what I would loot?
You would?
It depends.
It's about circumstances, isn't
it? It's circumstances. Yeah. I wouldn't do what they did in the London riots, just go out and get myself a new pair of trainers and a telly. I wouldn't do that. But I would do the Hurricane Katrina looting.
Would you?
Well, yeah, if I needed food. And, you know, supplies and all the rest
of it.
Oh,
that's different, isn't it? That's looting for survival and just thinking, hang on, everyone in that house has died, I can have their DVD player.
Oh, yeah, I don't think it's
what I would call LOL, levels of looting.
That's like 75% LOL. No, I wouldn't go in somebody else's house and have their stuff.
No.
I would go into town and mix in with the baying crowds, try and get myself a bag of rice. I would do that. So, Phil, Philip Lucas, that's the essential story. I mean, it's quite simple, isn't it? It's like one day in Bristol, everything got extremely wet. But why did it happen?
It is still sort of a mystery, okay?
Cool.
The first thing to say here is that the flood defences weren't as good as they could have been. Now, I'll be honest with you, Phil, I don't know how good sea defences generally were in 1606 or 1607.
No.
But they weren't as good as they could have been for that era anyway, and I'll tell you for why. Henry VIII.
Oh, bloody hell. Mm. Him again.
Yep, him
Is
again.
Has he cut the head off everybody who knew how to do flood defences?
It kind of in a roundabout way. Of course, dissolution of the monasteries.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the people who looked after the monasteries, I believe they were called monks.
Yep.
They tend to have responsibility for sea defences.
Did they?
Yeah.
Why did monks have responsibility
a
for sea
defences? A lot of time on their hands.
Right. I suppose if you're handing out jobs, yeah, you're not going to give it to a baker, are you?
I think monks would be thorough. But the fact is, the monasteries get disillusioned.
Yeah.
They get dissolved.
Yeah.
No monks.
Turn them into flats or something,
yeah,
do they?
Yeah, yeah. No monks.
Yeah.
No one to look after the sea defences. People coming into that land, into those old monasteries, they're like, ah, I'm going to bother with that. So nobody kept the sea defences up.
Oh, bloody hell.
It's a potential bloodbath. Sitting duck.
Something I have noticed about monks and history is that they are the first to get killed, aren't they?
Mm.
Terribly easy to kill a monk. Yeah. Like, because the Vikings came and the first people they all killed was monks.
They don't put
up
much resistance.
No, they don't, do they, a monk?
Because they're not known for their stash of armoury.
That's right. They haven't got, like, guns strapped to their legs, have they, underneath it. I think if I was going to invade a country, I think I would kill all the monks first just to get my eye in. Yeah, but why did it happen, though? I mean, like, there's got to be a reason.
Storm surge or tsunami, Phil? They're your two options. You got to pick one.
All right.
Pick one.
Tsunami.
Okay. I'll tell you what, we can chuck into the mix as well. Spring tides. We'll come to that later. But essentially, a storm surge or tsunami. You have picked tsunami.
Yep.
I will now explain all of this as best as I can.
Okay. Is there a difference?
I'll tell you up front. You're wrong.
Oh.
Or certainly, in my opinion, and I'm no scientist, but I've made a choice.
You have made a very distinct choice about a weather... A freak weather event that happened 600 years ago.
I have, and I'm firm in that. Right, tsunami. The idea that loads of 17th century West Country folk were washed away, never to be seen or heard of again, by a tsunami is actually a fairly recent hypothesis. The fact of the matter is that this theory owes its birth to two chaps, right?
Right.
You got Professor Simon Hazlett,
yeah,
who at the time was the head of geography at Bath Spa University College.
Yeah.
And you got another chap called Dr. Ted Bryant, who was from the School of Geosciences at the University of Wollongong,
yeah,
in Australia. Now, they published their theory in 2003.
Oh, so before the invention of the word.
Because they know about stuff.
Yeah.
They're clever. They knew about that word before 2004. So good on them, I say. In short, Phil, they started looking at loads of historical documents from the time. And what was being said in those documents seemed to kind of match their hypothesis.
Right.
One particular description they looked at came from a Puritan.
Right.
By the name of William Jones.
Good name for a Puritan.
Yeah,
Bill Jones. He sounds pure.
Very straightforward, isn't it?
No messing around.
No Barnabys or Oscars going on there.
I'd buy a pair of shoes from William Jones.
Yes, he wrote a piece called God's Warning to His People of England.
Oh, Puritans need to just pipe down, don't they? Bloody hell. Can we just get on with it?
That's what he wrote.
Yeah.
And this is what he said.
Then they might see and perceive afar of it is were in the element, huge and mighty hills of water, tumbling one over another in such sort as if the greatest mountains in the world has overwhelmed the low valleys of earthly grounds. Sometimes it so dazzled the eyes of many of the spectators that they imagined it had been some fog or mist coming with great swiftness towards them, and with such a smoke as if mountains were all on fire, and to the view of some it seemed as if millions of thousands of arrows had been shot forth at one time, which came in such swiftness as it was verily thought that the fowlers of the air could scarcely fly so fast. Such was the threatening furies thereof.
If you're basing a scientific hypothesis on that, I think you're on dodgy ground, because quite frankly, Phil, I couldn't understand a word of what was being said there.
So what, I mean, yes, I mean, it's Old English, so what the fuck, man? But like...
But apparently what is being described there does bear a resemblance to a tsunami as we know them in the sort of Far East over the last 15, 20 years or so.
So what he's getting at is huge and mighty hills of water, right? Tumbling one over another in such a way as greatest mountains in the world. So that's all nonsense. Sometimes it, nonsense. Hold on, a lot of this is nonsense. Nonsense. He's described it as millions of thousands of arrows being shot at the same time.
Don't get that.
That's not what a tsunami looks like.
No. I've never compared water but to arrows. Hill,
but hills.
Hillies.
Hillies.
Hill. Old English, it's got an E in it.
Yeah. Hillies of water sounds, you could say that sounds like a tsunami, but it's not much to go on, is it?
Seems a bit lame, I'll be honest with you, but these two chaps,
yeah,
you know, they're qualified men.
Yeah.
They came up with some other ideas, right?
All right.
They also found that massive boulders had been displaced up the beach by an enormous force.
Yeah.
So boulders that wouldn't be where they shouldn't be where they've ended up.
Well, how do they know, they've moved?
Well, you know what it's like. Well, Stonehenge, innit? The stones...
You can't just say Stonehenge, innit? Like, that's an answer to anything.
Well, look. The rocks in Stonehenge are not the type of rocks that are local to the area.
Yeah, but that's because they came from frickin' Wales or something.
Yes, so these boulders are in places where geologically they wouldn't normally be, so they've been moved by the water.
What, like bloody miles?
Yes.
Oh, God, yes. Okay.
So they got your boulders, yeah? They're not where they should be.
Yeah.
Also, they found a layer about 20 centimetres thick which contained sort of sand, shells and stones in areas where there was normally just a constant layering of mud.
Yeah.
So they found all this other debris that wouldn't normally be washed up in that area, which suggests that that's been pushed at great force. Okay. And that's not everything, right? Some of the historical accounts they looked at pointed to the weather being fine on the morning of the disaster.
Right.
So,
which is weird.
Not like a storm.
Oh, good point.
Good weather, wham, comes in, right?
Yeah.
And other accounts say that the wave appears to have been faster than a traditional storm flood.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know how many 17th century Bristolians and West Country folk are sitting there comparing the difference between a tsunami and a storm flood.
Good point.
I don't think it's probably on their radar.
Mm.
But that's what these people have said, right? All well and good, but to get a tsunami, what do you need?
You need an earthquake, mate.
You need an earthquake. And the problem here is that a strong tsunami requires an earthquake of a magnitude 7 or higher. There is no record of such a strong earthquake.
Yeah, because that would have affected other people, right?
Well, this is the thing, you see. This is the thing. There are reports of smaller earthquakes.
Yeah.
Because there actually is a fault along the... Bristol Channel.
There's a fault along the Bristol Channel.
No. I had no idea.
It'll explain a few things, I gotta tell you.
What I do know is the Bristol Channel and that area does sometimes have small earthquakes.
Does it really?
It does occasionally, but you get them in Lincoln now and again, don't you? They just go and it makes the news, and then some lady goes, get them. Right, but there was no real record of anything happening around that time.
Because it has to be a big earthquake,
right? It
has
to be a huge earthquake now. There was actually the odd rumour that people felt some tremors that morning.
Right.
But, you know, Puritans are saying one thing, farming folk are saying another. We don't really know. But
Henry VIII has killed anybody who's ever actually read a book. Are you going to trust?
But, Phil, I know what you're going to say.
What about a more distant earthquake, though, Phil? Why? Maybe it was an earthquake out there
Proposing a more distant earthquake.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. I'm proposing a more distant earthquake.
Doesn't help either, useless piece of crap. Because that would have produced tsunamis in many different regions, not just the Bristol Channel, and there weren't any.
And that's what happened in the Asian tsunami, isn't it? It was all over. Because you have an earthquake, it just goes around out in a big circle.
Exactly.
Doesn't specifically target...
the West Country.
The West Country.
And South Wales.
Yeah.
So no, in fact, the River Severn.
I am coming around to the idea that it probably wasn't a tsunami. Because it would, it would have been huge and it would have been everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Also, I think it has to be fair to say, the UK is actually fairly well protected against tsunamis because of the continental shelf, which disperses a lot of energy from tsunami. But forget earthquakes, Phil. Forget them. Put them out of your mind.
Okay.
Just don't think about earthquakes for the rest of the evening, yeah?
Okay.
Because a large tsunami can also be caused by a major landslide.
What?
Yeah, it doesn't have to be an earthquake. You could have a landslide.
You can't have a landslide in the sea, Lucas.
You can.
You can't have... How can you have a landslide in the sea?
There's
the
land
sea.
Under the sea.
No, there isn't. It's What's water the all the way down.
What's the seabed?
It's made of water.
What about the mountains that are bigger than the mountains in the world they under the sea? Are, what happens if they have a landslide?
They're all myths. The queen is a lizard.
So, you could have a landslide under the sea.
Right.
That could cause a tsunami. You could have really? A landslide from the land going into the sea.
Yeah.
Could cause a tsunami.
Yeah.
So, that could be a possibility. Slight problem.
Right.
No record of that happening.
Well, how would they know it was under the sea?
They... Look, I am basing this on the British Geographical Survey, no
oh,
less.
Oh, what? Just, these people, just something you found on the internet?
These people... That is a name, the British Geographical Survey. They know what they're talking about, and they've suggested that there's no evidence that a landslide happened on the continental shelf around that period. And they've done research, and they've gone out in ships and stuff, and divers, and they know stuff. And they know more than you or I, and I'm going to take my cue from them.
I'm prepared to accept the findings of the report.
Okay. So, it's not coming together well for the tsunami theory, is
no,
it?
No, I'm losing faith in it.
And I'm going to just throw one other spanner into the works. Remember that mad Puritan?
Yeah.
And his God's warning to his people of England?
Yeah.
Well, in that piece, it also said...
But so violent and swift were the outrageous waves that pursued one another with such vehemence, and the waters multiplying so much in so short a time, that in less than 5 hours' space, most part of these countries... and especially the places which lay low, were all overflown.
5 hours. Too long for a tsunami.
So he's saying this: it took 5 hours for everything to flood.
Yeah, see,
and
tsunami,
that's too long.
Too long. Tsunami normally just hit, bang, 15 minutes is about the average. I think we have to conclude it probably wasn't a tsunami, but I'll be honest with you, it's a lot of basing it on a lot of silly old buffers writing stuff at the time, isn't it?
I mean, this guy, he says it took 5 hours.
Mm.
But they ain't got clocks. What have they got? Nothing.
No,
they ain't got clocks, have they? This is sundials, isn't it?
Yeah.
Isn't it?
And they'll all be underwater.
They're only underwater. You can't look at a sundial underwater. It's all shimmery. So, I mean, how long it took. And we said earlier that it happened fast. It must have happened fast because people didn't have time to do anything.
Mm.
So the evidence of people drowning because it happened so quick, doesn't that outweigh this dude who can't even spell? Reckoning it took 5 hours?
You would think that, wouldn't you? Now I'm starting to come round to go, well, actually, no, hang on. Is that evidence that this wasn't a tsunami? If anything, that's evidence that it probably would have been.
Yeah.
And if you spill a glass of water, you could have the initial bit where it goes bang on the floor, and then it slowly spreads out. So it might be a big surge of water hits the floor, but then slowly it's going to... You know, go to the next part, go under your tables.
And this is a huge... Did you say how many miles did you say it went in? It was fucking...
About 14 miles.
14 miles.
Yeah.
I mean, how quick do you want water to travel, mate? I mean, 5 hours to do 14 miles for water, that's pretty quick, isn't it? I mean, I couldn't go 14 miles in 5 hours.
So we've swapped this round. So we've got this concluding piece of evidence and we're going, well, actually, no, hang on. This evidence saying it isn't a tsunami is not as convincing.
Exactly, yeah. Mm. Well, the things that are convincing is if a tsunami needs to have a big old seismic event, whether that be an earthquake or this wishy-washy idea of a landslide underwater as if that could ever happen thing. Something about mountains underwater sounds very Lovecraftian to me. But, you know, prepared to go along with it. That seems to me rings true. If it would happen, you wouldn't just get it in the Bristol Channel, would it?
No.
Have had it in France.
But Phil, I know what you're going to ask me next.
What about those boulders and the other bits of detritus and that?
Ah, well, there's a lot of folk there, right, who say that all that displacement could have been caused by a storm surge. The something that the two chaps who have done this tsunami theory have underestimated the power of. And you know what that does, Phil? That brings me very nicely to theory two.
Storm surge.
Storm surge.
I mean,
very good rapper.
Storm surge. Mm. I mean, didn't they say it was a nice day? You don't get a storm surge on a nice day.
Some folk apparently said it was a nice day.
Yeah.
But then, you know, some folk thought it was a year later than the year it was and a year earlier than the year it may have been.
Yeah, we haven't got rock solid evidence in this, have we?
No.
Well, tell me about storm surge then.
Those who think that the floods were caused by a storm surge argue that a tsunami hypothesis underestimates the volume of water and coastal damage involved in storm surges.
Right.
Which, to be honest, is what I've said about 2 minutes earlier, but with different words there.
I liked it, though, because it encapsulated exactly what we're talking about.
Also, Phil, a tsunami doesn't account for flooding that happened on the other side of the country at the very same time in Norfolk on the same day. And there was also severe flooding from the North Sea in Holland on the same day as the Bristol Channel floods.
Hold on, hold on. We've just said that one of the reasons it couldn't have been a tsunami is because if it had been a tsunami, that would have caused flooding in other areas.
Now
you've just said that there was flooding in Norfolk on the same day and in Holland.
Different sort of flooding, though, isn't it? different sort of flooding.
It's water coming from the sea into your house.
If you had a tsunami up the Bristol Channel, right, you're going to affect more of South Wales. You're going to affect Cornwall.
Yeah.
You're not going to then affect Norfolk, but not Cornwall. And a bit of Holland.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So what we're saying is it was a stormy day because other parts of the country had floods.
And that those people who said it was a nice day were just wrong.
Well, I mean, can you trust any of them?
Good point.
I mean, in all honesty, this historical evidence...
Yeah, it's all over the shop, isn't it?
I'm not. It's not Hansard, is it?
What's a storm surge?
Right. I'll tell you how I'm going to do it, Phil. I'm going to turn to the honest-to-goodness Met Office...
Oh, good.
The Met Office, Phil.
Yeah.
As British as strawberries and cream.
Yep.
Cricket on the village green.
Yeah. Barely concealed racism.
A storm surge is a change in sea level that is caused by a storm. They can lead to extensive flooding and are dangerous for people living in mainly coastal areas. For example, when Hurricane Katrina approached the US coast in 2005, it generated a storm surge of more than 8 metres in some areas. This led to widespread flooding, including almost all of the city of New Orleans, where the sea defences couldn't cope with the water level. The main cause of a storm surge is high winds pushing the seawater towards the coast. There is also a smaller contribution from the low pressure at the centre of the storm, pulling the water level up by about 1 centimetre for every 1 millibar change in pressure. This is called...
The sky is sucking the water up.
Yeah. Like a straw.
Wow. Okay. Mm.
This is called the inverse barometer effect and is similar to what happens when you drink through a straw. See what I just said?
Wow.
Yeah. The strong winds in the storm generate large waves on top of the surge, which can cause damage to sea defences or spill over the top, adding to the flood risk. That is all from the Met Office. I think that explains storm surges rather well.
Yeah, so A, very windy, pushing water places where it didn't ought to be.
Yes.
Two, some weird magic sucking mechanism is sucking water higher up into the sky than it would normally be. Mm. Prepared to believe that. And number three, it's raining. So
you're cool with that, yeah?
I'm good, yeah.
Also, Phil, I don't know if you remember... A long time ago now, I mentioned something called spring tides.
Well, they're just higher tides, are they?
Higher
spring
tides, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, the problem here is that on the morning of the disaster, the tide was higher than normal anyway because of those spring tides. Combine that with the storm surge, and you have got a disaster on your hands.
Yeah.
Do you want to know what spring tide is whilst we're at it?
Why not?
Twice in every lunar month, the sun and the moon pull the seawater in the same direction and a spring tide results. They're normally higher than usual tides by about a third and tend to be higher even in the winter. And don't forget, this was January.
Do you know what? This is ringing more true because, you know, we do this disasters podcast.
I do.
All of the disasters we've done, lots of them have involved lots of things that normally happen, but have all happened on this occasion at the same time.
Yes.
And so that really rings true, doesn't it? Spring tides that added to it.
Yeah.
Raining that added to it.
You're going
to
get raining no matter what, yeah?
Sucking up the water and the big windiness.
Yeah.
That's going to be... It seems things much more true than a sort of some sort of weird earthquake or landslide that's pushing water along. Yes.
So...
I've changed my mind.
You changed your mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, so storm surge tsunami, you are now...
I'm now a Lib Dem when it comes to...
Okay. Yes. Well, I think, to be fair, Phil, there you have it. It was either a tsunami or a storm surge. And I think... I'm coming down with you on the side of a storm surge.
Yeah, nailed it.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
But I'll be honest with you, Phil. I don't know about you, but in situations like this where I have to choose between two weather phenomenons, I always turn to Dr. Roger Moosen, who is head of seismic hazards at the British Geographical Survey.
Cool.
He reckons, right, that the tsunami theory is feasible.
Oh, bloody hell.
Ah, yeah, but he believes that a storm surge was the more likely cause.
Oh, and so he's on with it. Okay, cool.
Exactly. And like most things in life, Phil, if I'm not sure, I always trust a bloke called Roger.
Absolutely.
Think of a load of trustworthy Rogers. Roger Cook, 80s investigator from the telly. You trust him?
Yeah.
Roger Federer, he looks a very trustworthy Swiss.
He does.
Roger Moore.
Hello.
Roger Bannister.
Yeah, runner.
Roger Black. Yeah. Roger DeCourcy and Nookie Bear. All very trustworthy Rogers. Right, Phil, though, just to end this on a cheery note, because I can't leave talk of a storm surge or a tsunami with Roger DeCourcy and Nookie Bear, right?
No.
Risk management experts who have run recent simulations of a storm surge coming up the Bristol Channel today say that in a worst-case scenario, the flooding heights would top the existing defences, causing flooding over a huge area that would cover the cities of Bristol, Cardiff and Gloucester.
Shit.
There is also concern that the two nuclear power plants in the area would be flooded.
That's bad news.
And the cost of the disaster would be about £20 billion. Aye. That's not good, is
That's
it?
That's not good, that, is it?
Yeah.
Ah.
I've just about coped with it. We can cope with that.
And do you know what I've done as well?
What?
I've murdered all the monks. Oh no!
Should we not move to Bristol?
No, let's not move to Bristol. I'm going to move to the Grampians. So, Phil, that was the fantastic story of the Bristol Channel flood. Our fault or God's fault? I'm a bit excited about this because I think I know which way it's going.
Okay, well, Phil, I have been thinking about this a lot. And according to the Puritans at the time, we've heard of them this podcast, the floods were evidence of God's anger with the established church.
Deafers.
So I'm going with them.
It's God's fault.
Yeah.
I think this is the first God's fault we have had for an extremely long time.
Yeah.
It's nice for God to show
his wrath.
To chant his arm. And, you know, if God's going to be angry with any city, it's going to be Bristol, isn't it? Because of Banksy. thank you so much for listening to the Crash Bang Wallop podcast. We've been off air for quite a long time because... various things trying to fit it all in. Philip Lucas, you've been chipping rust off your railway lines, have you?
Yes, one of the reasons I haven't had time. We don't run the railway in the winter. Therefore, when we don't run, the rails and the third rail, which is the conductor rail for the electricity, get very rusty.
Yeah.
So I've been wanging the train up and down, which is a way of de-rusting the train in preparation for the new season. So I haven't had time to be doing a podcast because I've been de-rusting the line.
So, yes, we will try and get another podcast out to you pretty soon. Have we got anyone to thank?
You know what? Nobody has left us a review. I mean, fair play. We haven't exactly been prolific in our podcast, so
no.
Fair play. So nobody's left us any reviews, you bastards.
Bastards.
But I understand it.
Yeah.
We have had a lot of nice people on Twitter have recommended us, particularly
when you get some people, don't you,
say things like, oh, anyone recommend podcasts? And some people kindly say, oh, why don't you try these guys. So that's very kind. So we're very grateful for that. Thank you very, very much.
If you want to be one of the people who follows us on Twitter, you can do that. We're at CB Wallop. Are we?
We are.
Excellent.
We're also on Facebook. Hardly ever use it. We're on Instagram. Both of us have forgotten the login for that.
Absolutely.
So the short of it is, it's Twitter, isn't it?
Also, we got contacted by somebody who was actually involved in one of the disasters we've talked about, which was amazing. And it was really fantastic that you got in touch with us and to discuss what happened to you. So we just want to say thank you very much.
Yes,
it was awesome.
Thank you. It was very moving to read. And thank you very, very much for contacting us.
So, Phil, have you got anything to add?
No.
Nothing?
No.
Come on.
Nothing.
Okay. Thank you so much for listening to the Crash Bang Wallop podcast this week. We will be back as soon as Phil Luca's rusty third rail will allow and bring you some more fabulous, horrific content. But until then, thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Goodbye.